Katra Podcast Conversations, for the curious essential knowledge simplified. Your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Katra AI. Welcome back, everyone, to the Deep Dive. Today, we're tackling a really foundational piece of work, Napoleon Hill's Think and Grow Rich. You've probably heard of it.
Oh, absolutely. It's almost impossible not to have heard of it if you're interested in success or business, right? I mean, yeah. It came out way back in 1937. Think about that, the Great Depression.
Right in the middle of it.
Exactly. And here comes Hill saying, basically, that your bank account starts in your head.
Yeah.
That you could, you know, actually think your way to wealth. Wildly radical for the time.
Totally. That's the core idea, isn't it? That success isn't just luck or where you came from. Hill argued it's predictable, like an inside-out thing.
Spot on. An inside-out process. It all kicks off with thought. Powerful thought.
So that's our goal today, yeah. To really get into the nitty-gritty of his system, those 13 principles he laid out for, well, turning thoughts into stuff. Real results.
It's quite a system. But before we dive into the principles themselves, maybe we should talk a bit about Hill himself. Understanding the author helps understand the book, I think.
Good call. Napoleon Hill, born 1883, a real pioneer in what we now call self-help.
Right. But he wasn't just some guru making things up. He started as a journalist, a researcher.
And the story of how this all started is, well, it's legendary. 1908, he gets an interview with Andrew Carnegie.
Yeah, Andrew Carnegie, steel magnate, possibly the richest man on earth back then.
Imagine being a young reporter and getting that assignment.
Well, Carnegie apparently saw something in Hill. He didn't just give him a few quotes for an article. He threw down a challenge, a huge one.
Huge is right. Mm-hmm. Carnegie basically said, look, I think there's a formula for success. If you dedicate the next 20 years of your life to studying the most successful people, I'll open the doors for you.
20 years, no pay initially, just the promise of access.
And what access? He got to sit down with over 500 of the biggest names.
Yeah.
Henry Ford, Thomas Edison, Bell, Rockefeller.
The titans of that era. He was essentially doing massive qualitative research decades before that was really a thing in this field.
Collecting the data on what made these outliers tick.
Exactly. And what makes Hill's perspective so potent, I think, is that he wasn't just an academic observer.
Yeah.
He'd known poverty. He'd failed himself. So he combined this rigorous two-decade study with, you know, real personal understanding of struggle.
That gives it weight, doesn't it? He wasn't just theorizing from an ivory tower.
Not at all.
Yeah.
He was documenting a system he believed was empirically proven and one he understood from the inside out.
Okay, so let's get into that system, that philosophy. After spending 20 years with the world's most successful people, what's the big takeaway?
Well, it really boils down to this core concept. Thoughts are things. That's the heart of it.
Thoughts are things, meaning?
Yeah. Meaning that your mind, when you focus it properly, when you channel it using the specific steps Hill outlines, it doesn't just respond to the world. It actually helps create your reality.
Yeah.
Mental energy, especially when it's mixed with strong emotion and a clear purpose, it has like creative power. It can manifest tangible results like wealth.
Okay. But we should probably clarify what he meant by rich, right? Because it wasn't just about money, was it?
Definitely not. That's a common misconception. Hill's idea of richness was much broader, holistic, really. Yes, financial success is part of it, a big part. But he was talking about a whole philosophy of achievement, finding spiritual peace, having good relationships, personal fulfillment, the whole package. It's a mental toolkit for life.
So the book lays this out systematically.
Yes, through 13 distinct principles.
Yes.
It's structured like a journey. You start inside with your mindset, things like desire and faith. Then you move outwards to practical application planning, working with others. And ultimately, it leads towards developing what he called the sixth sense, like a highly tuned intuition.
Who is this for? Just aspiring millionaires.
He intended it for anyone, really. Anyone feeling stuck in, you know, mediocrity, anyone wanting to break through limitations they feel are holding them back. The principles are meant to be universal. And a big part of that is learning to conquer what he called the six ghosts of fear.
Ah, yes, the fears. Fear of poverty, fear of criticism. What were the others?
Ill health, loss of love, old age, and death. He believed these fears paralyze people and prevent them from taking action.
Just listing them makes you think, doesn't it? Which ones are active in my own life?
Exactly. It's a powerful starting point for self-analysis.
Okay, let's dig into the principles themselves. Where does Hill start the journey? He starts with a story, right?
Yes, the story of Edwin C. Barnes. It perfectly illustrates the first and maybe most crucial principle.
Tell us about Barnes. He wanted to work with Edison.
He didn't just want to work with Thomas Edison. He had this absolutely unshakable, burning desire to become Edison's business partner. And this is key. He had no money, no connections, nothing tangible going for him.
So how did he even get in the door?
He basically just showed up at Edison's laboratory. Looked like a vagrant, by all accounts. But Edison saw something in his eyes, this intense, almost obsessive determination. So he gave him a job, a really menial one.
Like sweeping floors or something.
Something like that. But Barnes didn't see himself as a menial worker. In his own mind, he was already Edison's partner, just waiting for his chance.
And he waited for years.
Years. Until Edison invented a new dictating machine. His regular salesman thought it was a dud, wouldn't sell.
And Barnes saw his opening.
He jumped at it, said he could sell it, put together a plan, went out, and marketed it so successfully he eventually made a fortune and became Edison's exclusive distributor for that machine. He literally thought his way into partnership.
Oh, that perfectly sets up principle one, desire.
Exactly. And Hill is very clear. This isn't just a wish or a hope. It's got to be a burning desire, an obsession almost, something that fuels you through obstacles.
And he doesn't just leave it there, does he? He gives a very specific how-to, the famous six steps.
Right. This is where the philosophy becomes very practical, very actionable. It's the method for crystallizing that desire.
Okay. Walk us through them. Step one.
Step one. Fix in your mind the exact amount of money you desire. Be definite. No vague, I want more money.
Step two.
Determine exactly what you intend to give in return for this money. There's no something for nothing. What service, what product, what value.
Step three. Establish a definite date by which you intend to possess this money. Creates urgency.
Step four. Create a definite plan for carrying out your desire and start at once, whether you feel ready or not. Action is key.
Step five. Write it all down. A clear, concise statement covering the amount, the date, the return, and the plan.
And step six, the crucial one. Read your written statement aloud twice daily, once at night, once in the morning. And as you read, you have to see, feel, and believe yourself already in possession of the money. You engage your emotions.
That emotional engagement, that belief, that leads directly into the next principle, doesn't it?
It does. Principle two, faith.
Now, faith can sound a bit mystical. How does Hill define it here?
He's very specific. It's not religious faith necessarily, although it can be. In this context, faith is psychological. He calls it the head chemist of the mind. It's what gives life, power, and action to your thought impulses, to that desire. It transforms the blueprint into an active force.
Yeah, and it's not something you're just born with.
No. Crucially, Hill argues faith is a state of mind that can be induced or created through repeated affirmation. Through practicing those six steps, essentially, through visualization.
Okay, so you build faith.
Yeah.
And the mechanism for building it is?
Principle three, auto-suggestion. This is basically self-suggestion. It's the communication channel between your conscious mind, where your desire lives, and your subconscious mind.
The subconscious. That seems really central to Hill's thinking.
It's absolutely vital. Think of the subconscious as fertile soil. It doesn't judge. It will grow whatever seeds you plant. It accepts and acts upon any thought impulse, positive or negative, especially if it's mixed with strong feeling or emotion, like faith or fear.
So if you don't consciously use auto-suggestion to plant your desires and faith,
then it gets filled by default with all the doubts, fears, and negative suggestions floating around in your environment or your own habitual negative thinking. Auto-suggestion is how you take control of that planting process.
Okay, desire, faith, auto-suggestion. This feels very internal, very mental. But surely success requires more than just thinking and feeling.
Absolutely. Hill wasn't saying only think. He was saying thinking is the crucial first step that directs everything else. But then you need knowledge.
Which brings us to principle five, specialized knowledge. I skipped four there, didn't I? Accurate thinking.
We can loop back, but specialized knowledge is key here. Hill really pushed back against the idea that just having a general education makes you successful.
He wasn't impressed by degrees alone.
Not necessarily. He argued that great fortunes are built on specialized knowledge, knowledge that's organized and intelligently directed towards a specific end, towards your definite purpose. And importantly, you don't have to possess all this knowledge personally in your own head. You just need to know where to get it and how to organize and apply it.
Like knowing how to use libraries or experts or nowadays the internet.
Exactly. Knowledge is only potential power. It becomes actual power when organized into plans of action and directed to a definite end.
And where do these plans come from? Where do the ideas originate?
That's principle six, imagination. The workshop of the mind, as Hill called it.
He breaks imagination down, right, into two types.
Yes. First, there's synthetic imagination. This is where you rearrange old concepts, ideas, or plans into new combinations. Most invention, most planning happens here. You're working with existing materials.
Like combining existing technologies to make a smartphone.
Good example. Then there's creative imagination. This is rarer. It's the faculty through which you receive new ideas, inspirations, hunches. Hill believed this connects you to what he termed infinite intelligence, a sort of universal database of ideas. It's where truly original breakthroughs come from. It's often stimulated when your conscious mind is quiet or working intensely on a problem.
Okay, so we've got the desire fueled by faith, directed by knowledge, sparked by imagination. Now we need to actually do something.
Precisely. This takes us to principles 7 and 8, organized planning and decision.
A plan is basically turning the desire into steps.
Exactly. Converting thought into organized action. But just having a plan isn't enough. You need decision. This was a major finding for Hill. He observed that highly successful people make decisions very quickly.
And change them very slowly, if at all.
Right. Spot on. While people who fail tend to make decisions, if they make them at all, very slowly and then change them frequently and quickly.
He uses a powerful example for decision making, doesn't he?
He does the 56 signers of the Declaration of Independence. They made a huge, definite decision signing that document knowing it could mean their death if the revolution failed. That level of quick, firm decision, backed by courage, changes things. Hill saw indecision and its twin, procrastination, as absolute enemies of success.
Okay, but plans don't always work out first time. What happens when you hit roadblocks? When you face defeat?
That's where Principle 9 comes in. Persistence. This is absolutely crucial.
Willpower in action.
That's a great way to put it. It's the sustained effort needed to keep going, to induce faith even when things look bleak. Hill stresses that temporary defeat is not permanent failure. It's often just a test from life to see how serious you really are about your desire. He found success often comes just after the point where most people would give up.
That's encouraging. But sometimes persistence alone isn't enough, is it? What if you need help or different perspectives?
That leads perfectly into Principle 10, the power of the mastermind. This is one of Hill's most famous and, I think, powerful ideas.
The mastermind. I hear that term thrown around a lot. Is it just like networking or having a mentor?
It's deeper than that. Hill defined the mastermind as the coordination of knowledge and effort in a spirit of harmony between two or more people for the attainment of a definite purpose.
Coordination, harmony, definite purpose. Okay, so what's the power part?
Hill believed that when two or more minds work together in true harmony, they create a third intangible mind, a synergy. This mastermind can access more knowledge, creativity, and power than any individual mind within the group. It creates a kind of psychic advantage. Carnegie apparently attributed his entire fortune not just to his own abilities, but to the collective power of his mastermind group of advisors.
That makes a lot of sense, leveraging collective intelligence and energy. So we've covered 10 principles: desire, faith, auto-suggestion, specialized knowledge, imagination, organized planning, decision, persistence, mastermind. What about the last three? They seem a bit more esoteric.
They are a bit deeper, yes. They deal more with harnessing fundamental energies and the deeper levels of the mind. Principle 11 is the mystery of sex transmutation.
Okay, that one always sounds a bit controversial or confusing. What did Hill actually mean?
Yeah, the language is dated. He wasn't talking literally about sex in the way we might first think. He viewed the sex drive as the most powerful human emotion, a source of immense creative energy. Transmutation meant consciously redirecting that intense energy away from purely physical expression towards other creative outlets, your work, your art, your business goals. It's about channeling powerful emotional drive.
Harnessing your strongest energy for your purpose.
Okay.
Then Principle 12.
The subconscious mind. We touched on this with auto-suggestion, but here Hill emphasizes it as the realm of habit. It's the control center for your automatic actions and reactions. Every thought you consistently hold, positive or negative, gets embedded here and influences your behavior without you consciously thinking about it. Mastering the subconscious is key to lasting change.
And finally, the peak of the pyramid.
Principle 13, the sixth sense. Hill saw this as the apex achievement, something that develops once you've mastered the other 12 principles.
So it's not something you start with.
No, it's the outcome. It's where your creative imagination becomes highly attuned, able to receive insights and warnings directly from that infinite intelligence. Essentially, it's developing a powerful, reliable intuition or foresight that guides your decisions beyond just rational analysis.
Wow, okay, that's a comprehensive system. 13 steps from desire all the way to intuition. If we had to boil it all down, what are the absolute core messages someone should take away from Think and Grow Rich?
I think there are maybe four really central themes that run through everything. First and most fundamental, the creative power of thought. Your outer world really is a reflection of your inner world, your dominant thoughts.
So change your thoughts, change your life, literally.
That's the premise. Second, the primacy of definite purpose. You absolutely must know what you want specifically. Vague hopes get vague results. Success needs a clear target fueled by that burning desire.
No drifting allowed.
Pretty much. Third, recognize the subconscious mind as a success mechanism. It's working 24/7. You have to consciously program it for success using faith and auto-suggestion. Otherwise, it'll just absorb fear and doubt by default.
Take control of the programming.
Exactly. And finally, a really empowering one. View failure as temporary defeat. Setbacks aren't the end. They're feedback, tests of your resolve. Success often lies just beyond the point where most people quit.
Don't give up, basically.
In a nutshell, yes. But understanding why not to give up is key. It's part of the process.
The book is also famous for its very quotable lines, isn't it? Short, punchy summaries of these ideas.
Oh, absolutely. Packed with them. They really stick in your mind.
What's the most famous one? Probably the one that encapsulates the whole book.
Has to be. Whatever the mind of man can conceive and believe, it can achieve.
This says it all, really. Conceive imagination. Believe faith. Achieve result.
Perfectly put. Another powerful one emphasizing the starting point. Desire is the starting point of all achievement, not a hope, not a wish, but a keen, pulsating desire which transcends everything.
You really feel the intensity in that phrasing, keen, pulsating desire.
Yeah. And then there's a great practical warning. Opinions are the cheapest commodities on earth.
Meaning, don't listen to naysayers.
Exactly. Especially uninformed opinions or criticism. Stick to your decisions once you've made them based on your own thinking and planning. Don't let others' doubts derail you.
And the classic one about persistence.
Simple but profound. A quitter never wins and a winner never quits. Non-negotiable.
Okay, so we got the principles, the themes, the quotes. How does someone listening right now start applying this stuff? Make it real in their own life?
Great question. Let's make it super practical. First, goal setting. Take that vague career goal you have, maybe a promotion or starting a side business. Apply Hill's six-step method tonight. Define the exact outcome, the money involved, the date, what you'll give in return. Write it down and start reading it aloud with feeling. Turn the wish into a concrete plan.
Okay, step one, crystallize the goal. What else?
Use the mastermind principle consciously. Don't just network randomly. Think about your specific goal. Who are two or three people you trust whose knowledge or perspective complements yours and who operate in a spirit of harmony? Intentionally form a small, focused group to discuss your plans, get feedback, and hold each other accountable, even informally.
Build your personal board of directors. I like that. Mm-hmm. Application three.
Mindset management using auto-suggestion. Actively listen to your self-talk. When you catch a limiting belief like I'm just not good with money or public speaking terrifies me, consciously replace it. Write down an empowering affirmation. I am becoming financially astute and building wealth systematically, or I am developing confidence and skill in communication daily. Repeat it with belief. Reprogram.
Be your own programmer. And maybe one more. How about dealing with fear?
Yes. Use the six ghosts of fear as a diagnostic. If you're stuck procrastinating on something important, ask. Which fear is stopping me? Fear of criticism. Fear of failure, which is related to poverty. Identify it. Then take one small, definite action today that goes directly against that fear. Just one step. It starts to dismantle the fear's power.
Those are really actionable takeaways. As we wrap up, looking back at the whole book, what stands out most to you and particularly surprising?
For me, I think it's the sheer systematic nature of it. The idea that success isn't some mystical random event. Hill presents it almost like engineering. He argues there are definite laws, principles. If you apply them correctly and persistently, the result is predictable. It kind of removes the luck element and puts the power squarely back in your hands. That feels radical even today.
Yeah, the idea that it's a process you can learn and execute. What about the ultimate insight for you?
I think it's the fundamental connection he draws between the inner and outer worlds. The idea that wealth consciousness must precede wealth accumulation. You have to cultivate the mindset of success, the desire, the faith, the persistence first. That internal transformation is the absolute prerequisite for achieving the external results. It connects the metaphysical thought, belief, with the intensely practical planning action. It's a complete system.
A powerful framework indeed. Well, that brings us to the end of this deep dive. See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Akatra Foundation.